So as you can see, I'm talking about constructions of abstract polytopes where we have a pre-assigned automorphism group and number of flag orbits. And I'm going to start with by defining abstract polytopes, and I'm going to go through kind of the full formal definition. But basically what you need to know about an abstract polytope is you can basically think of it as a generalization of the face lattice of a convex polytope. So you can kind of keep that in mind as we go in if you don't remember all the details of the formal definition. Okay, but we're going to actually start by starting with a poset, and we're going to give certain conditions that if the poset satisfies them, it basically will resemble a polytope. Okay, so the first one is that we're going to have a unique minimal and a unique maximal face. You can think of the minimal face as being the empty set, the maximal face being the polytope itself. Maximal chains by inclusion are called flags, and we will continue to use the term flag, so keep that in mind even if you don't remember the rest of the details. So every flag of P contains exactly n plus 2 faces. Again, if you're thinking about convex polytopes, you can think of one face for every rank or dimension. When in the language of posets, we call two things comparable. In polytopes, we're going to call them incident. And we have sections, which are basically, if we have two incident faces, the set of all faces which are incident to both of them is called a section. So our third condition is if we have this, let's say, two-section, so G and F are faces that differ by two ranks, they're exactly two faces of that intermediate rank in between them. So we call that the diamond condition. Again, I know I'm going through this a little quickly, but just keep in mind the convex polytopes. And our last condition is that we are strongly connected. And so basically what connected is that if you have any two faces, there is a sequence of incident faces from one to the other one, which doesn't go through that minimal or that maximal face. So strongly connected just means that every section has this connectedness property. And while I'm kind of having you think of this as just kind of the face lattice of convex polytopes, the polytopes that we're going to be talking about today will not be convex polytopes. In general, they're going to be degenerate if you kind of consider them in Euclidean space. And I kept mentioning kind of the face lattice of a convex polytope, but we also don't require them to actually be a lattice. So one thing that's actually going to come up a number of times are things like digons, which you have two vertices and two edges, and you can notice this is not a lattice. These two edges don't have a unique lower bound. Okay, so while I'm telling you to kind of think of convex polytopes, the things that we're going to be dealing with are not actually going to be convex polytopes. Okay. So, a couple more definitions before we can really get started. Okay, so what's an automorphism in this combinatorial context? It's just a rank and incidence preserving bijection. We call an abstract polytope regular if its group of automorphisms acts transitively on the set of flags. And a k-orbit polytope is a polytope in which the set of flags has k orbits under the action by the automorphism group. So from this context, you can actually think of an abstract regular polytope as being a one-orbit polytope. Okay, so that's kind of the relationship here. And our last definition, second to last actually, is that this is not something that's unique to regular polytopes, but all regular polytopes have what's called basically a Schlafly type. And it's this basically series of, I'm going to generalize, a series of integers where these two sections, I think I said two sections before. Anyway, these two sections basically are all going to be isomorphic to polygons, and it basically tells you what type of polygon is. So based on the rank of F and G, you're going to get basically this P-igon. Okay? All right. So the next thing I want to talk about is, projection is not going as I hoped, but is string C groups. And in the title of this talk, we talked about we're going to be constructing polytopes with a pre-assigned automorphism group. The pre-assigned automorphism groups are always going to be these string C groups. Okay, so that's going to be where we're starting with. And it's going to be a quotient of a Coxeter group, which we're going to be, these string C groups are all going to be quotients of these groups that have n-distinguished generators, and they're all going to be involutions, and they're all going to commute with the exception of adjacent generators, but they're quotients of these, so they can have additional relations. And they have to satisfy this intersection condition. So the intersection condition basically says if you take these subgroups, and the subgroups are generated by some set of distinguished generators, and you intersect them, so I'm looking right here, then this intersection is just going to be generated by the intersection of those two subgroups. And we have this natural correspondence between C string C groups and regular polytopes. And so in particular, if you have a string C group, you can always build a regular polytope whose automorphism group is isomorphic to that string C group. And what we're going to do in this talk is we're going to try to extend that condition to polytopes which are not one orbit, but rather have more orbits than one. Okay? So, here's the question that we are going to be asking today. So given a string C group and a number j greater than or equal to 1, is it always the case that there's a polytope P with j flag orbits whose automorphism group is actually isomorphic to that original to the string C group that you started with? So notice again, just to reiterate, the case j equals 1, that's when we're talking about regular polytopes, the answer is yes, we have this natural correspondence. And the way that we're going to do it is we're actually going to use the regular polytope that we can build from that string C group. So if we're given a string C group, we're going to build the regular polytope the way we know how, and then we're going to change it around, and we're going to add some faces, change some faces, add degeneracies in a way that we hope will come up with a polytope where the automorphism group is exactly how it's the original automorphism group, but we hope to be adding in more flag orbits. Okay, so let's actually give the construction. And we're going to define it combinatorially, and as I go through, after I kind of define the construction, I'm going to go through and give you some examples so you can kind of see what these things actually start to look like. So we're going to start with our polytope P. So again, this polytope P is going to be the regular polytope that we built from a string C group. Okay? So we start with a regular polytope P, and it's going to be at least rank 3. This question is trivial, or the answer is no, I guess, for ranks 0, 1, 2, because all polytopes are regular. So we're really only talking about rank 3 and up. And we're going to pick some k between 0 and n minus 1, and we're going to define this polytope pk. Okay, so what are we going to do? For all of the faces of ranks up to k, the smaller rank faces, we're just going to take the old faces of p. Nothing new happens. The k faces are going to be ordered pairs of k faces of p, okay, so f is going to be a k face of p, and k plus 1 faces of p that are incident to each other. Okay, so you can also think of these as kind of directed edges. Okay, so those are the k faces. And the k plus 1 faces are basically there's two types. There's the original k faces of p, and there's these ordered pairs. Now where f is, again, the I faces of p. So these are for all faces of rank greater than k. So you can have the original I faces, and you're also going to have ordered pairs of a k face with an I plus 1 face. So notice this is kind of, these two are basically the same. Because here, this whole ordered pair is a k face of the new construction, and g is a k plus 1 face. So it's kind of down one rank. And here, this is an I face, where f is always k face, and g is an I plus 1 face of p. Okay, so these ordered pairs we're going to call faces of type 2. And these original faces, so up here and also down here, we're going to call type 1. And notice also that for I equals n minus 1, g, there's only one n face, and it's incident to every single k face. So these ordered pairs actually just correspond to the k faces of p. So the facets, meaning the n minus 1 faces of our new construction, are going to be of two types. They're going to be the original facets and the original k faces. And I'll show you some examples. I'm going to quickly not really go through this slide at all, but when we're defining this this polytope, we have to define basically a partial order on these faces, but it basically follows fairly naturally from the partial order on P itself. But I'm actually going to go back to this slide for the sake of giving you some examples. Okay, so we'll start with rank 3, and our example is going to be, that we're going to start with, is going to be the cube. So we're going to start with the cube, and we're going to start with k equals 0. Now, k equals 0 is always going to be the geometric concept of truncation. Okay, so what happens in truncation? Truncation, you basically slice off every vertex, and what's left is the vertex figure. So here's kind of a local picture of a corner of a cube. I slice off this vertex, I'm left with a triangle here. Okay, so let's look what happens. Our k faces are, so everything lower than k, k is 0, so our negative 1 face is just the empty set. Our k faces are exactly these ordered pairs, right? So the vertices, you can see this vertex kind of corresponds to an ordered pair of this original vertex with this original edge. Am I drawing way too small? Sorry. let's fix this. Okay, so this vertex, this new vertex, corresponds to the ordered pair of this original vertex with this original edge. Okay? Now, we have two types of edges. We have, this was an original edge of the cube. This was an original edge of the cube. Okay? We also have edges, this, which corresponds to the ordered pair of this vertex with this two-face here. This was a square here. Okay? And our two faces, we have the original two faces, as well as these new two faces, which correspond to this ordered pair of this vertex with the cube itself. Okay, and again, you can because this is a facet, you can think of this basically just corresponding to the original vertex. Okay, so what happens with that's truncation, that's k equals 0. What happens with k equals 1? So k equals 1, so here again is our local picture. What's going to happen is we're basically going to double each edge, or you can think of it as replacing each edge with a digon. Okay, and again, right, this is still part of a cube, so, okay, so, our faces of rank lower than k, so that would be our zero faces, our vertices, are exactly the vertices of the cube. Nothing's changed. Keep them the same way. Our edges correspond to just the ordered pairs, so we have, so this edge, for example, corresponds to the ordered pair of this edge with this two-face. In our two faces, we have the original two faces as well as these new two faces. This, you know, this digon corresponds to this original edge with the whole polytope. The k equals 2 case, you're actually going to get back exactly what you started, the cube itself. Okay? Now rank 4, to go ahead a little. So our example is going to be the cubical tessellation of 3 space. And this is going to be the truncation of that, so this is going to be the k equals 0 case. So if you can see what's happening is each vertex is replaced with its vertex figure, which is an octahedron. So again, the k equals 0, every vertex is just an ordered pair of an original, so let's say this vertex right here corresponds to the ordered pair of this original vertex with this edge right here. We have two kinds of edges, the old edges and the new edges, which correspond to this one right here corresponds to that vertex with this two-face, right? Our two faces are the original two faces and the new ones corresponding to a vertex and a, so this one would correspond to this vertex and this cube that would be up here. And the three faces are the original ones and the ones that correspond to the vertices with the whole four polytope, okay? So if you keep picturing this cubical tessellation, but I don't have a picture of this, what's going to happen with the k equals 1 case is every edge is going to be replaced with this kind of spindle-looking thing, so which is a 2, 4. Okay? And so, what's going to happen is, right, these edges are going to be the ordered pairs of an old edge and an old two-face. These two-faces are going to be the ordered pairs of an old edge and an old three-face, and this whole thing is going to be an ordered pair of the edge with the whole four polytope. And again, for k equals 1, you only have the ordered pairs, you only have the type 2. For k equals 2 and 3, you have two different types. Right? You can see, if you can kind of picture it, if you replace every edge with one of these, you're still going to retain your old two-dimensional faces and your old three-faces, but you're putting in new two-faces and new three-faces. And again, the vertices are exactly what they used to be. The k equals 2 case, let's look at it again. You are going to replace every square with basically a ditope of the square. So basically picture this as kind of a square bubble. So it's basically two squares identified along their boundaries. Okay, with kind of, you can kind of picture it kind of bubbling out in between. So basically we kind of double each edge, and that's going to be the K2 case. And again, the K equals 3 case, that's going to be N minus 1, you're going to get back what you started with. Okay, so hopefully that kind of gives you an idea of what these things look like. All right. So. Alright. So the first thing, which you probably have somewhat figured out, is that you're always actually going to get an abstract polytope when you do this. That the combinatorial definition lends itself to actually satisfying all four of the conditions for polytope. The question that we want to ask, right, to go back to the point of this talk and what we're trying to figure out is, in what circumstances does this construction retain the automorphism group of the polytope that we started with? Right, in the examples that I gave you, you can kind of see that you're going to have all the same symmetries. Right, if you think about this in Euclidean space as opposed to combinatorially, right, every reflection that you used to have, you still have, and you haven't gained any more symmetries by, you know, creating multiple edges or kind of doubling faces. But you do have some examples where you're not going to keep your automorphism group. For example, what I have on the board right here already, if we actually started with this 2-4, and we apply T1, right, so remember what that's going to be is we're just going to double each edge. What's going to happen is each edge is going to double, and we're going to get this 2-8. We don't retain our automorphism group. So the problem that happened was we now have automorphisms of this 2-8, right, so we basically have 8 edges, however you want to draw that. We now have automorphisms that take faces of type 1 to type 2, or vice versa. And we want to figure out how to avoid that from avoid that happening. And it turns out that we have a sufficient condition, and that's that the initially free type, that pk is not equal to 2. It's not a necessary condition. We can actually do considerably better, but whenever we have whenever pk is, so here you can see, right, we're taking, this is p1. Right, and we're getting a problem when we are trying to find p1, right? So it turns out that not letting pk equal 2 is a sufficient condition. So we have the following results. Sorry about this. Okay. So if pk is not 2, then when we apply this construction, then we're going to end up with the same automorphism group. And notice that in this particular case, we're not looking at the k equals 0 because we don't have a p0. We do have some conditions for when you're going to retain your automorphism group in the k equals 0 case. I'm just not presenting them right now. Okay, whatever it is the case that you do keep your automorphism group when you do this, whether you're right in this case in particular, but also in other cases, then you're always going to get an n minus k orbit polytope. So we are getting closer to answering our question, right? Because we have this construction now that allows us to start with a string C group, build a polytope from it, change that polytope around in a way that we get a certain number of flag orbits. Okay? But we're not quite there yet, right? There are some strengths and weaknesses too, besides the fact that it doesn't work always. So some of the strengths are, as I showed you, this is a generalization of a well-known geometric concept, kind of put forth combinatorially. It's also a generalization of certain constructions of two-orbit polytopes. So this is kind of on one extreme, we have the k equals 0 case. This is the k equals n minus 2 case. So the real extreme, the k equals n minus 1, is just basically a identity operation. You get back where you started with. But this is kind of the penultimate. And basically, there's these two-orbit polytopes. There's rather, I'm not going to get into all the details, but there's a construction. And you will either get a two-orbit polytope or a directly regular polytope, and it's given algebraically. And this combinatorial construction is always a combinatorial description of what that is, whether that comes out to be two-orbit or directly regular, because as we saw, our construction can come out to be two-orbit or not, if we're talking about n minus 2. So that's one strength. And an obvious weakness in terms of answering our original question is that we can only use this to generate polytopes with up to n flag orbits, right? We can't take p sub, 112 if we're talking about a rank 5 polytope. So that's definitely a bound in terms of answering our question. But we do have other constructions that allow us to have arbitrarily many flag orbits, but I elected to show you this one because I think it's more interesting in its own right, and you can kind of do more with it. One of those particular constructions, one of those constructions is very similar to this one, but the n minus 2 faces kind of play a role similar to what the k faces are. And again, I'm not going to give you the details of the construction. I can talk to you about it later. But because of that, we have this condition that, PN minus 2 is not 2, is again going to be a sufficient condition there. But because all we care about is if the automorphism group is isomorphic to our string C group, we don't actually care necessarily about the order of the generators being exact, we can also take a dual and then apply the construction. So actually, our sufficient condition is just that P2 and PN minus 2 are not both 2. And in this case, so any string C group that as long as P2 and PN minus 2 are not both 2, then with that automorphism group, we can construct a polytope that has any number of flag orbits greater than or equal to 1. Okay, so we're getting close to answering our question. We're getting to the, well, almost always. And we can actually do even better than this. There are further conditions that are a little less interesting that we can put on and say, well, actually, if these things are true also, we can do it. But unfortunately, the answer to our question is in general negative. So here's our counterexample. If we take this Coxeter group, this abelian Coxeter group with just a direct product of a bunch of these C2s, there is no two-orbit polytope which has this as its automorphism group. Okay? So this is an example of a string C group and a number J, 2, which you just can't do it. It just doesn't work. But for this particular automorphism group, if we go anything 3 or above, we do have polytopes that have this. So it's a very small counterexample. It's very specific. Oh, I'm on play, I guess. Stop. Okay. Sorry. Okay. I guess I can move on now anyway. So now that you've seen this result several times now, in any odd rank, all right, we'll just let it all go. What? Oh, God. It was what I had said out loud. Stop it. Okay. Hold on. Sorry. All right, can you see this? Command F. All right, this is good. All right, so here's what we were saying before. This is just what I was saying before, that for this particular group, J equals 2 is the only place where it doesn't work. But for any other J, it does work. Okay. Now, in any odd rank, this is actually the only counterexample. So you can kind of think of this two ways. You can think of it as for any other group except for this abelian Coxeter group, you can construct a polytope for any J. Or you can think of it as for any J except for 2, no matter what string C group you have, you can construct a polytope that has that number of orbits. Okay, so that's for odd rank. Now for even rank, we have this counterexample that we were talking about before. And we also have, this is actually an open case right here, that every other entry of the Schlafly symbol is a 2, and the alternate ones are not 2. So we're talking about a quotient of a direct product of dihedral groups, but that the dihedral groups themselves can't be split further, so they're not Klein 4 groups. And that's actually an open case. So we know that anything other than these two cases, you can always do it. And then the conjecture is that the polytopes that have this Schlafly symbol here actually behave the same way as this abelian Coxeter group, is that you can have, that there isn't a two-orbit polytope, but for any J greater than or equal to 2, there is such a polytope. Anyway, so are there any questions? Sorry about this.